TIAA was created to serve. In the past 3 years, we've shared $10 billion in profits, not with shareholders, but with participants, our retirement plan customers. And for years, we've provided them personalized financial advice at no extra cost, regardless of the size of their accounts. Why do we give back to participants? It's simple. So they can give back to the world. Learn more at TIAA.org.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and we're delighted to have you here with us today. Let me read you a little quote from the book that we're going to talk about today. There is also something soothing about handling fabric. We clothe ourselves in fabric and it protects us from the elements and from unkind eyes. It covers and protects us when we sleep. Quilts are a natural extension of the comfort and protection we receive from fabric. It seems right to use fabric to create healing quilts, whether they're to soothe us bodily as a lap quilt or to soothe our minds as we create art. And that sort of nice summary of quilting altogether. And let me welcome Claire Luz, who is a professor at the Michigan State University in Lansing, Michigan. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Osteopathic Medicine College. So welcome, Claire.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great. So you and two other great women have put together a gorgeous book called Quilts and Health. And I have my friend Robin Martinez with us, and we'd like to talk with you about it today. So welcome, Robin. How are you doing?
Hi, Joyce. It's good to be here as always.
Robin is the primary coordinator of the Smart Patients online support group for people. So she has been dealing with people dealing with a lot of different illnesses for a very long time. And as you know, I've been working with illnesses as well. So we're going to talk with Claire about quilts and health. So Robin, why don't you start?
Okay, Claire, you developed this beautiful, beautiful book, which is just amazingly full of gorgeous pictures and stories about quilts that were done for health or by health people. Tell us a little bit about how the project started, would you?
Sure. So the lead author is Dr. Marcia McDowell, and she's also at MSU. She's a curator of the folk arts division at the MSU Museum. And she is also my sister. And she has always been in the arts, and I have always been in the health field. I was trained as a medical social worker. I'm a gerontologist. And right now I have a research appointment, and all of my research is either on the elder care workforce or related to the intersection of the arts and health. So I've always been in the health field, and Marcia and I always wanted to do some work together. And then back in 2009, I was invited to coordinate a panel for the Art Prize event in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the intersection of art, health, and medicine. And I turned to Marcia and said, you know, you want to be a panelist? Because I think you know something about quilts, and I'm sure you have some related to health, don't you? And she said, well, let me check. And she went back through her files. And, you know, Michigan State University has one of the largest quilt collections in the world. And Marcia is the director of the Quilt Index, which is an online digital repository of quilts that have been registered. And right now there are over 90,000 quilts in the Quilt Index for anybody who's interested in getting in there and searching around. It's an amazing resource for people who appreciate quilts. So Marcia
okay,
went
let's
back.
Let's take a side journey here.
Okay.
How did, how do people register a quilt and why?
Well, for a lot of reasons, but all you need to do, and Marsha will probably correct me later, but get online. It's quiltindex.org, I believe. And it'll explain how you go about doing that. But people
so
register
anybody
their... Anyone who has made a quilt or has a quilt that they feel has historical value or that they want to have in this collection for one reason or another, you can do it on behalf of a quilt maker. So a number of people have registered quilts that their ancestors have made. People do it for all kinds of reasons, anywhere from just wanting to have it documented as a historical piece. You know, quilts really reflect history in many ways, or to memorialize their loved one who made the quilt or whoever it was made in honor of, or for insurance purposes, or, you know, there are a lot of reasons why you would want to register your quilt. So if you get on the Quilt Index website, if you just Google it, it's a wonderful site. Anybody interested in quilts should take a look at that. And it's truly amazing. It has over 90,000 quilts registered in it right now. So that's a resource for everyone. So Marsha did go back and looked in her files and through the Quilt Index and was absolutely stunned to realize how many quilts are related to health in one way or another. And being an expert on quilts, she and quilt history and has written many books on it, she realized that this was actually a subject that hadn't yet been tapped. Nobody had ever put two and two together and tried to track the history of health-related quilts or why people make health-related quilts or how many are making them or, you know, where and when and how and why. So that's how the whole project started. We set out to do that starting in 2009. So it's been a long project. It's been a labor of love for a lot of reasons.
That's really
you are with a book.
How something just comes together like that.
Yeah, you know, I'll just tell a little story. It's soon, not terribly long. You know, our mother was a very good researcher and historian in her own right, art historian. And so she was initially helping us research the health-related quilts, but then she was in the hospital, and Marsha and I were both standing vigil, and we decided to play a little game with the health personnel, the doctors and nurses and PAs that would come in. And we would ask them, you know, if they could think of any kind of medical condition in which quilts were not being made, this was a challenge. So they would come in and they'd say, I know, fibromyalgia. And Marsha, especially, and then I would search, do Google searches and to see if we could find any quilts related to fibromyalgia. And we would find them. And then somebody else would come in and say, okay, how about irritable bowel syndrome? And then we would find quilts on that. And as it turns out, we couldn't stump them, or they couldn't stump us. You know, they were not able to come up with any condition. If you name any condition, there are quilts being made for that purpose. And it's not just one or two quilts. It's hundreds, sometimes thousands of quilts that are made related to these individual conditions.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it pretty much floored us. And we, you know, as we started collecting data, we realized how big health and quilt making is. And we collected this astronomical amount of data. And then it was a challenge of how do you organize this? How do you process it all? And, you know, find the common patterns and the reasons why. But it's truly amazing. It's unknown to most people how connected quilts are to health in many, many ways, whether it's for fundraising purposes or public awareness or public education, such as one of the most famous ones is, of course, the National AIDS quilt, to raise public awareness and use it for educational purposes, in addition to memorializing the people with HIV. But it's also, you know, it's become an amazing educational tool. So there's that, and fundraising. We have great stories about fundraising, using quilts for fundraising, where, you know, a single individual has raised over $1 million for Alzheimer's research.
Wow.
Just
wow.
Through quilt making. So it's incredible.
And you mentioned one lady who has made 400 quilts for patients in Lansing at a little hospital who are getting chemotherapy. That's an amazing individual effort.
Yes. And that, it's not just about featuring the quilts. We were really intent on the stories behind each one. And the book is filled with gorgeous, gorgeous images of these amazing quilts, beautiful quilts. But there's this really poignant story associated with each one. And anybody who's gotten the book so far has picked it up and, you know, read a story here or a story there and are moved by these stories. And I really think, the one you're talking about is related to Marcia. And I should mention, too, we have a third co-author, Beth Donaldson, who is a quilt maker, and she also works at the MSU Museum, and she was invaluable in this study. But also my project coordinator, Katie Hansen, did a lot of work, not as an author, but in making sure this book, you know, looked good. But the story that I think you're talking about is an interesting one because a couple of years into this project, Marcia was diagnosed with breast cancer. And the first time that she went for chemotherapy, she was sitting in the waiting room waiting for her treatment, and it's a pretty sterile room, and there are other people around. And, you know, it's a frightening experience to do that, especially when you're alone. And soon after she took her seat, one of the nurses came over to her with a big shopping bag. And I think it was actually two shopping bags and said, "You get to pick one of these." And Marcia looked in them and couldn't believe it. There were two quilts in there. And she said, "What's this all about?" And the nurse said, "Oh, well, we have this volunteer who makes quilts for anybody who's coming to their first chemotherapy appointment because it's cold and sterile in here. And you know, it's usually a frightening experience. And they want the person to feel warm and comforted and cared for." And Marcia, she tells this story in the book, said, you know, This was the first time that she had actually cried over that diagnosis. She saw those quilts and, you know, the floodgates opened. But it's, yes, this that person has made 400 quilts specifically for that purpose. And there's story after story like that throughout the book.
Yeah, that's just amazing. And that actually brought a tear to my eye hearing you tell it.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Remarkable. Yeah, a lot of the stories are tearjerkers. So, but, you know, they're all actually stories of hope, too, which is one thing we want to emphasize is that's the beauty of the quilt is that they're either made for the individual person for their own health and well-being, or they're made for a loved one, or they're made for total strangers. And it's remarkable how the quote network now is so advanced because of the invention of the internet and social media and listservs, and you know, there's just so many examples of, for example, a natural disaster or a tsunami or an earthquake. If somebody, a quilter, quilt maker gets online and says, you know, there are all these victims of a natural disaster and they need comfort and they need help, it's like a wildfire. All of a sudden there are thousands of people making quilts and they come pouring in, and then somebody has to organize them and send them to the relief organizations. But the response is almost immediate. And so those quilts that go to people are meant to show that people care and to provide hope. So
yes, and I'm a quilter, and I've made quilts for charity quilts, we call them. And, you know, that you give away, you don't have any idea who's going to get it. We make baby quilts, we make comfort quilts, as you said. And just last year, I got a note from a lady in Facebook, and she said that 10 years ago, she had gotten a quilt when her daughter was dying, and used it with her daughter, and then kept it and wrapped herself up in it while she was grieving and everything. And one day she actually read the label that had been on the quilt all the time, and it said it was made by Joyce Graff in Brookline. And she found me in Facebook and sent me this lovely note, and it was such a gift.
Wow.
Not, you know, now I have goosebumps.
So I shared it with my quilt guild, because we rarely hear from people who get those quilts.
Yeah.
Actually, we're sort of discouraged from putting a label on it. So it must be one of the early ones I made before I heard that. But anyway, it was a privilege to do it. And, you know, the way I got into quilting, my son has a rare disease. And my husband had the same rare disease, and I've been dealing with von Hippel-Lindau disease for 50 years. And one day, about 20 years ago, my sister invited me to a quilting retreat, and I thought, okay, you know, I have this 80-hour-a-week job, and I'm running a nonprofit for VHL on the side, and she wants me to go to a quilting retreat, but I went with her, and we had great fun for the weekend. It was quilt till you drop. You know, my sister's always the last one to bed and the first one up. So we'd be up till 2 o'clock in the morning and out for breakfast at 8. And for 3 whole days, just did nothing but quilt. And it was so wonderful and so therapeutic. I kept doing it. She showed me her stash. I said, Margaret, what do you need all this fabric for? This is ridiculous. And then now my stash is at least as big as hers. So it gets in your blood, and it really is fun. And what I found was that I had jobs that went on forever. You know, I remember one time I declared I was going to clear my desk no matter what. I was going to catch up, and I worked till like midnight every night for a week. And at the end of the week, I sat back and said, there's more on my desk than there was at the beginning of the week. So I'm just going to have to make peace with the fact that this job will eat every hour I am willing to give it. And so I'm going to have to declare my limits. And I started making quilts in the odd hours of the nights and weekends. And it was so therapeutic. And what I noticed was that it felt good doing it, but it also meant it was something I could finish. You know, you get to the end, you make something, you put the last stitch in it, you say, gee, this is really pretty. And other people say, oh, that's beautiful. My goodness, how'd you do that? How long did it take you? I said, months, you know, because I'm fitting it in around the edges of my life. But it was so nice to finish something, get rewarded by the feel of it, the look of it, the responses from other people. So quilting is a reward in itself.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that one of the rewards is that it's a time-limited project that you finish, but it takes a long time.
Yeah.
You know, these are not quick projects. And some we do mention in the book that a number of quilt makers who have health conditions of their own, terminal health conditions, will start making a quilt, and people will question it, you know, like, well, that's going to take you a long time. And the response is that, you know, it's almost it's therapeutic in many ways, but it also sort of keeps them going. It's like, I have to stay alive to finish this thing.
Right.
So, the fact that it's a time-limited project, but it takes a long time, appeals to people for that reason.
I saw in your bio that you use quilts in when you teach medical students about the experience of disease. Tell us some about that.
Well, so we got a small grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities to work with another team to begin to digitize all of the panels on the National AIDS quilt. And my little piece of that was to take what we learned and create a workshop for medical students and residents using quilt images in their stories to teach them about the human experience of illness. And I did come up with a two-hour workshop that I have piloted several times now, and I'm hoping to do a lot more with it because I think the response was really quite good. I ended up piloting it with three different groups of residents at a local, first-year residents, interns at a local hospital here, OBGYN and family medicine, I believe it was. And it was very interactive. I showed images of the quilts and told the associated stories. And then they all have their computers, and they were, you know, to bring up the quilt index and search that and come up with a health-related quilt that kind of spoke to them, and then talk about how it spoke to them and why it resonated with them. But it's interesting. One of the little exercises I used was to put a quilt image up and then ask them to figure out what condition they thought it was depicting, medical condition. And some of them are really, really obvious. Like we have an amazing quilt, a couple of them actually, of somebody with dementia. And you look at the quilt and it has photographs of the person real clear in the upper left-hand corner, but as you get down to the lower right-hand corner, they fade, get lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. And it's just so clear. It's Alzheimer's disease or some other dementia.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the quilts are really harder to tell. They're more abstract. So we have another Alzheimer's disease quilt that it's gorgeous. You would never know it was related to that disease, but all woven through it, the quilt maker had embroidered forget-me-nots. So, you know, just the titles of these quilts alone, that one's called Forget-Me-Not. But we would have the medical students look at these images and try to tell, you know, what condition is the artist trying to convey here? What are the emotions the artist is trying to convey? And it teaches them, I mean, the idea, the hope is that it teaches them to be a little more acutely aware, to hone their observation skills and to look at it and try to, from the patient's point of view. Now, the patient might, you know, be, one of the quilt makers, for example, a quote that stuck with me was that the feelings I have about having this condition are too deep for words. And it's through the quilt making that she can express her feelings, only through the quilt making. So a doctor or a future physician wouldn't necessarily understand what a patient is going through if they can't put it in verbal, you know, verbalize it or articulate it with words. So, but if they can look at that quilt and get a sense of what the patient is going through, and then it helps with individualizing that patient care and making it more humane. That's the idea behind it, and I'm hoping to do a lot more with that.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, one of the things that came, I belong to a quilt guild in Boston and a quilt guild in Memphis where my sister lives that I go to with her. And the quilt guild in Memphis had a challenge. I guess it was a national challenge about doing quilts using fabrics from a collection called the Healing Garden that are images of different plants that are used in the treatment of cancer. And so we had a little contest amongst our group, and the quilts were donated to the Women's Center at the Baptist Hospital for their cancer treatment patients. And they're on the wall in Memphis. Anyway, I did one, which won the first prize, but anyway, that had on it the names of people that I knew who'd been affected by breast cancer. I had breast cancer in 1979, so my name is on it, but friends of mine who died, friends who survived, and it was very meaningful to me at the time. And then in the course of my son's condition in 2001, I wound up giving a kidney to him, and it struck me that here I had breast cancer in 1979, and I was well enough in 2001 that I could donate a kidney to my son. So it was a sort of personal triumph. And so I made a second quilt, like the breast cancer quilt, that I donated to Beth Israel Hospital in Boston that hangs in their transplant center. And so that's the story behind the story of the quilt that's in the book. It's on page 161. If anybody's curious, you can get the book and look at my quilt, too.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to mention that Joyce does have we did choose one of Joyce's quilts to be in the book, and it's a beautiful, beautiful quilt. And, you know, we're forever indebted to people like you who were willing to share your stories. It's a beautiful quilt that Joyce made, and it is in the book. And it's stories like yours that are really going to, I hope, now touch people, other people's lives, whether they're going through something similar or, you know, I just think it's these stories are stories that people can relate to, and it's going to touch them deeply.
Yes, and I'd encourage people to play with it, even if they say, oh, I can't sew. Anybody can drive a sewing machine. All you have to do is draw a straight line. And you can learn how to do it. But you don't have to make anything extensive. It doesn't have to be big enough for the bed. It can be, you know, 3 feet by 3 feet. But something that speaks to you. You pick up a panel even that plays with you. And as you describe very well in the book, there's a therapy of creating something beautiful. The feel of the fabric, the doing of it is therapeutic. And you can make a statement about yourself, about your loved one, about someone you lost. All together, you know, try it. You just might like it. And it's not necessarily all for women. I know some very talented men artists, one of whom has things in the Smithsonian, that also find this very therapeutic. One of the most prolific quilters in Memphis was a guy, and we always said, oh, yeah, he gets to quilt all the time because his wife cooks dinners.
We have stories of several men. In fact, the back cover has a beautiful quilt on it called The Beat Goes On by Ricky Timms. And,
Ricky Timms is a wonderful quilt designer. He has a lot of great stuff. Yeah.
There are men quilters, and you don't have to have been a lifelong quilter either. I just wrote a piece on people who take up quilting later in life for a number of reasons, including the fact that they might have more time now than they did earlier in life. But it is something you can take up later in life. And I think it is distinct. One of the things we're pointing out is there are other art forms, any creative outlet that's expressive, right, that allows you to create, to express what's going on in your heart, in your mind, and therapeutic. But I do think that quilts are distinguished from other art forms, even other textile art, in that, like you said when we first started, it's you know, sort of the quintessential comfort item. It's like chicken soup and macaroni and cheese and quilts. And,
right.
You know, but it's also, you can wrap it around you, and it's often made out of materials that are from fabrics, from clothes that, you know, somebody once wore, but there's a lot of memories sewn right into it, and it's beautiful. So it's texture, so you can feel it. And some quilts have a lot of different textures built into them. In fact, there's a new quilt that's used for therapeutic interventions in medicine for people with dementia who are anxious or, you know, fiddling with something all the time. There are now these lap quilts that are called fidget quilts, and they go by other names too. But the makers put all different kinds of textures on there, or put working things in there, like a working zipper, or that somebody can just zip and unzip and zip and unzip. And it really does calm the person down. It gives them something to fidget, you know, with. So all of these things. I keep saying to people, if you were going to respond to a catastrophe and you knew a bunch of people needed blankets, why don't we just send them a bunch of blankets? You know, this is there's so much more to it. We don't send them a bunch of blankets. We send them quilts
We send them love.
That's right, exactly. And it's love that they can wrap themselves up in, literally. And a lot of times throughout the book, you'll see stories or references to people feeling like it's almost like getting a hug from the quilt maker when they wrap that quilt around them. So,
Claire, thank you so much. We're going to run out of time here. And I want to thank you very much for joining us. I want to remind everybody to go look for Quilts and Health. You can find it on the internet. I got it from Amazon. And just try it out. It's a gorgeous book. You'll enjoy it. It makes a great gift. And I hope that you will find some joy in the pictures and maybe even create something yourself. So thank you very much, Claire and Robin. And thanks to everybody for being with us. We hope you'll join us again next time. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
If only we were born knowing how to retire. Brought to you by TIAA.
My target for retirement? Income for life.
I invest right and I can start working my way through that bucket list.
Start planning today at TIAA.org. TIAA was created to serve. In the past 3 years, we've shared $10 billion in profits, not with shareholders, but with participants, our retirement plan customers. And for years, we've provided them personalized financial advice at no extra cost, regardless of the size of their accounts. Why do we give back to participants? It's simple. So they can give back to the world. Learn more at TIAA.org.